Greetings, salutations, and positive vibrations, and a happy, happy, happy new year to all of you listening to the world-class football podcast, Off the Post. I am your host, football journalist Nick Maitland, and a wonderful, wonderful upcoming 12 months to all of you. This is 2022. This is the year where we make all things new and we put aside all the things that we didn't like about 2021 and we press forward with ultimate hope that 2022 will be even better. And I wish that for all of you in our football world, in our sporting world in general. I wish for all of you a wonderful year. Now, we've had a bit of a break, but now we come back to Off the Post. We have a few things to discuss. Mainly, what are we going to do this year with regards to our football? Are we going to play? Will we have a league? What is going to happen? What is the situation? And our own Anmar Goodridge Boyce, he spoke to the BFA, Barbados Football Association, General Secretary Edwin Wood, and Anmar broke this story regarding football. And this is what Mr. Wood had to say. Hopefully, the pandemic conditions allow for permission to restart football from the government so the leagues can commence. Our women will also have their World Cup qualifiers in February and April, and we are hoping to get enough practice and game preparation in order to do well. Remember, I told you on a previous episode that the women are going to the CONCACAF W Championship qualifiers in February and April. Wood also said, the BFA also is looking at more engagement with our stakeholders to be better able to serve the footballing community and its supporters. So in August, this is Anmar reporting for us now. In August, the BFA submitted a proposal to health authorities outlining its plans to restart football competition in a safe manner despite the coronavirus pandemic. And with the all the variants and everything going on now, it seems like we are going to be even further away from sport. But I pray and I hope that this year will be even kinder to us in regards to restarting competition and restarting training for our young athletes, because they need to play. They are seeking scholarships. They are seeking professional endeavors, and we have to keep them active. So we will wait and see what will happen for the rest of this year. But with regards to football, we're still up in the air, unfortunately. We'll wait and see what's going on. A few weeks ago, we celebrated Angelo Doyle. He is a referee and he's been doing great things despite the stoppages caused by COVID-19. And he has been named to the FIFA list. He's been named with Tonya Dean. She's a stalwart of the list, and Kevon Inches Clark. So we congratulate Angelo Doyle for finally making it to the FIFA list. He's worked hard at whatever competitions he's been able to work at, and he has impressed those who he had to impress, including head of referees manager Mark Bob Ford. As such, he is on the FIFA list, and we're hoping that he stays there. And Shannon Gibson, our very own assistant referee, she suffered an injury a couple years ago, and she was not named to the list, but we're hoping that she can regain her spot on the list as well. Now, moving on. We are still battling COVID-19, unfortunately, and 2021 was such a year that had some stoppages, some normalcy, a blend of both. It was frustrating at times, but we will press on into 2022 and hope for better things to happen. Some games are being postponed in England and all over, but England is really the only one suffering as we speak, because England are the only ones still carrying on the competitive lead. Anyway, we move on. We have a problem on our hands, but I think that we are a little closer to solving it than we were at the beginning of 2021. So we give thanks for the progress being made and hope that we can make even more progress. One thing about the new year is we have the Champions League. The Champions League commences, I think, next month. There was a glitch in the first time they drew in the round of 16, but there was another draw, and this is the draw. FC Salzburg from Austria, they take on Bayern Munich from Germany. Sporting Lisbon from Portugal, they take on Manchester City of England. Benfica from Portugal, they take on Ajax from Netherlands. Chelsea from England, the defending champions, they go up against Lille from France. Atletico Madrid from Spain take on Manchester United from England. Villarreal from Spain I think Villarreal are the Europa League champions as well. They take on Juventus from Italy. FC Inter Milan from Italy take on Liverpool, the 2019 champions. And Paris Saint-Germain from France, Lionel Messi and company, taking on Real Madrid from Spain. So Sergio Ramos will take on his former club. But I think he'll be fine. That is the Champions League draw. We're looking forward to that this year, in the upcoming months. In all honesty, I think we have to have great optimism for this upcoming football season. So much has happened in 2021. Lionel Messi winning his first international trophy. Lionel Messi moving from Barcelona to PSG. We never thought that would happen. Cristiano Ronaldo moving from Juventus to Manchester United, returning home, as they say, to Manchester United. Wow, so much has happened. Chelsea won the Champions League. N'Golo Kante was the man of the match there. Lukaku returned to Chelsea. He's been talking about the manager, which I don't agree with. Footballers will be footballers. Italy beat England in the final of the Euro 2020 at Wembley. Wow, and there's so much else that has happened. Even in our local football, we really had a year, a tumultuous year on the pitch in our local football. And to speak about that, well, maybe a little bit, is head coach of our national selection, Coach Russell Little Magician Latapy, here to spread some New Year's magic to Off the Post, the world class football podcast. I spoke to our coach and he is excited for 2022. He admits 2021 was not the best year, but he is excited for what 2022 will hold. I spoke to him about his football upbringing, about his history in football, his life as a person, as a Trinidadian, and I asked him if Carnival would be back this year, if he would attend. I can't remember his answer, but stay tuned for my conversation with Coach Russell Little Magician Latapy here on Off the Post, the world class football podcast.
You can contact your Nation Publishing subscription team 7 days a week in 7 different ways. Call customer service any day at 430-5550. Call subscriptions at 430-5503 or 04. Email subscribers at nationnews.com. Email epapersupport at nationnews.com. Visit www.nationnews.com and select print subscriptions. Visit www.nationnews.com and select e-paper subscriptions. Visit our office on Fontebelle St. Michael. If your call is not answered, please leave a message. We are here to serve you. Nation News, your news, your time, your way.
I have with me Coach Russell Latapy. I have your full name here. Russell Nigel Latapy. Whoa, I won't tell the people, how old you are exactly, but, Russell Nigel Latapy, from 1990 to 1994, you would have played in Academica, 94 to 96 at FC Porto, 96 to 98 at Boa Vista, 98 to 2001 at Hibs, Hibernian, 2001 to 2003 at Rangers, again, in 2003 at Dundee United, and from 03 to 09, probably, I guess for you, the one of the most memorable times of your career at Falkirk, where you are inducted into their Hall of Fame. And you also played for the Trinidad and Tobago national team from 1988 to 2009, gaining 81 caps and 29 goals. I hope that information is correct.
Good evening, firstly. Mm-hmm. I guess you're getting that off of Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Without telling people how old I am, just without listening.
So people can glean then. People can glean how old you are from that list. But hopefully that list is accurate.
It sounds about accurate to me. You know, I was fortunate enough that football is and was good to me as a player, and I participated in a lot of high level competition, and that was at that point in my life, and you know, and something that I always look back on fondly. presently, obviously, it happens to most players who get a bit older and want to stay into the game, is that you get into some other capacity in terms of contributing to what football is, you know. And I got into coaching, and I absolutely love the effect that I have on a lot of young life.
We would have spent a bit of time together in Florida earlier this year. And one thing that you mentioned in our conversations was growing up in Laventille, Trinidad, the home of Steel Pan. Am I correct? Is he home of Steel Pan?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, I did my research, you know, I did a lot of research. So tell me about growing up in Laventille and how football helped you to, I guess, overcome that tough upbringing.
Well, I guess growing up, to me, it was like growing up in pretty much every neighborhood that have the same challenges is what we had growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, things were difficult. We didn't always have the things that we wanted, but my parents always tried to make available the things that was needed. But, you know, football, growing up in these neighborhoods, and there's a lot of kids, and, you know, everybody's around. You know, you find every little sport you can play, and every little piece that you have, you want to play on whatever is in season, may it be cricket or tennis or football. And for whatever reason, I found that I had a little knack for playing football. You know, and from there it just led me to this life where that I would play 3 games in a day on a weekend, and I would play in various leagues and just try to hone my skill, mm-hmm. you know, and become better at being a football player. I think kids these days are not afforded the same situation, you know. I think and there's both good and bad in it in terms of, I think things now, are a lot more structured, a lot more organized, which is better. It protects the kids to a greater extent. But on the other hand, and on the other side of that coin, you know, it limits their creativity and their natural self to a certain limit as well, you know. So I think it's about, and it's something that I say a lot, it's about finding the right balance. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's how we try to play on the national team as well. We need to have some sort of structure and organization. But in saying that, you know, we don't want to take away from these players' creativity.
Speaking of creativity, in fact, that's a question I have that I'll come back to. I was speaking to someone recently. We were speaking about yourself and your good friend, Dwight York. And speaking about the difference in your careers, and the person pointed out to me that there was a tough economic time in Trinidad in the late '80s or so, mid '80s, late '80s. And because Dwight, being a Tobagonian, he was afforded different opportunities that you were not. And as a result, you had to delay your departure for, you know, big football, bigger football. Is that true? What happened?
I can tell you right now that is very incorrect.
Okay. Right? So what happened there, right, in terms of the right beginning of your career?
The reality is that every coach, every team, they're looking for different things at different times, depending on the cycle of their team, whatever. Mm-hmm. Right? What happened to Dwight, and which was amazing for him, is that Aston Villa came to Trinidad on a preseason trip or on a winter break or something like that. Mm-hmm. They played the Trinidad national team. Dwight had a fantastic game against them. He was 15 or 16 years old. Mm-hmm. And any smart manager at the time knew that you can get a player who was showing that potential at that age, already playing at senior football, would definitely take a chance on this player. Mm-hmm. I mean, back in the day as well, we're not talking about the type of money that they're throwing around in football presently, mm-hmm. you know. So it wasn't easy and a good decision for the Aston Villa manager at the time. And he invited Dwight back, and fair play to Dwight. He, he will to achieve everything that he has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, getting the opportunity is one thing, and in reality, making use of the opportunity is a completely different thing, which is some of the things that we try to get these young players to understand as well. And my opportunity just came at a later date, you know, and I tried to snatch it with both hands as well.
Okay, so it was purely football related, nothing to do with Trinidad and the economy and that sort of stuff.
Nothing to do with that. Purely football related. At the time, I also played against Villa that day. I thought I didn't do too badly myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the needs of the team at the time, or what the manager saw in the different players, that is a fantastic decision, you know,
Okay. You see, nothing happens before its time, and no opportunity passes you that is indeed for you. So, I will have to speak to the person that told me that bit of information and say, no, brother, I think you're wrong, because from Mr. Latipi's mouth, he told me that this is how it went down.
A lot of people, and we're talking about situations, and a time that is, 20, 30, maybe even close to 40 years ago, right? So, I mean, along this time, a lot of stories would develop and whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, our association, at the time, was run by Mr. Austin Jack Warner.
Mm-hmm.
And, in his early years of running the association, he did a wonderful job in creating opportunities and initiating leagues and academies and this sort of thing, and giving football the support that it needed to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And through that period, we actually grew and we had a golden generation of players, which I think is really the generation that actually got to the World Cup.
Right. Tell me about that experience playing at a World Cup. I know there was a lot of, I know this definitely involves Dwight. There was a lot of back and forth, with Dwight trying to encourage you back to the national team. I know you would have felt some resistance because you're wanting to have that opportunity of playing at a World Cup, but still wanting to have the younger players come through and have their opportunity after you have been in the national team about 20 years at that point almost. So how was that experience playing at the World Cup, and what did you learn from it, even though it was late in your career?
It was the greatest honor of my playing career. You know, I was fortunate, like I mentioned, in my career that I played in big clubs who played Champions League football and European football and won domestic league titles and that sort of stuff. I was fortunate enough to do that. But representing your country at the World Cup, especially a small Caribbean island, has to be and is the greatest honor of my playing career.
Mm-hmm.
What actually happened with the World Cup, though, is that I was 36, going on 37 years old, and I'd already retired from national football and international football, therefore, maybe on three or four occasions for various reasons. But getting up to that age, you know, you kind of say to yourself, when you come back and you play for the national team as well, sometimes your club career suffers, a player gets seen, he's playing well, the team is winning. And then there's the understanding as well that the general public need to understand that back in the days we didn't exactly have the FIFA footballing windows as we have now.
Right.
You know, we had a different little window for CONCACAF, although it might have been close enough. But it wasn't like now where all the leagues are pretty much on hold,
mm-hmm.
and players can get back to the national team and represent and then get back and fight for their place again. So during my career playing for Trinidad, on various occasions, you come home, it's important games for your country, and then you get back up, and then you're trying to get back into the team, or maybe the coach is unhappy that you left at a crucial time. So there's a lot of different things that comes into play. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so when I finally retired, that time Dwight having a conversation with me convinced me that that I should come back and play two games, and if we didn't get the desired result in these two games, then we couldn't qualify. So we got the result, and I believe it was, I think it was Guatemala, and it might have been either Mexico or Panama. We got the results that we wanted. So then we had two more games. So again, we played the two games. We got the desired results, and we got into the playoff. Once we got into the playoff against Bahrain, we drew in Trinidad, and as well documented, and we won 1-0 with a Dennis Lawrence goal, and in Bahrain. And at this time, you know, I'm 37 years old, or coming on to 37 years old, and I'm saying to the coach, who was Leo Benhaka, that you know, if he wanted to take a younger player who was gonna get something more out of going to the World Cup, in the longevity of his career, that would be fine with me. But he insisted that that he wanted to take me, and I'm very happy that he did, because it was an amazing experience. You know, just representing the Caribbean at a major tournament was fantastic.
Glad you look at it that way, of representing the Caribbean, not just Trinidad, but representing the Caribbean. And you represented the Caribbean when you played in Europe as well, and became the first Trinidad and Tobago player to play in the Champions League. But what I want to ask you about specifically, we went through your whole European career at the top of the show, but what I want to ask you about specifically is playing under Sir Bobby Robson. He's considered a legend among football managers and in football in general. And he's one of those persons that people always, oh, I wish I was able to meet him, wish I was able to have a conversation with him. You did both of those things. You played under him. You experienced success with him as well. Tell me about him and his impact on your career and your entire football philosophy.
Well, in reality, I feel as though that was so impactful in the longevity of my career. The time that I spent at Porto and working under Sir Bobby. Technically, I could always play football, you know. And what I mean by that, I can control and pass the ball. And a lot of Caribbean players, including myself back at the time, had the notion that what football is, solely, you know. And then at Porto, there were so many understandings that you had to learn to get into the team. And to me, the crucial one, or the biggest one, I should say, was the understanding of the tactical game inside of the game, you know, how you work in your unit, you know, where you want to win the ball back, you know, the real tactical side of the game. You know, it's not really 11 players trying to take on 11 players. You know, it is a question of we being a unit, and you have to come and break us down, or we are offensive as a unit. And I think that was the biggest part of the game that I learned under him, you know. But he was a master. He was a master of his trade. You know, one of the things that I can particularly remember was that I was sitting on the bench one day, and we were playing a game, and it was a difficult game at home that we were playing, and I can't exactly remember who we were playing. But whoever it was, they just came and they sat in, and as Mourinho says, they parked the
Party bus,
you know?
Yeah,
they parked the bus, and we would attack, and we just couldn't get in the net, and they would just get back down the park, and there we go again. And, so he made a change, and we are decided, we looking, and we thinking, well, he's taking off the player who we think is performing the best on the day. You know, the person we think that who is most likely to score a goal for us. And he took him off, and about 15 minutes later, the player that he put on he went on and scored, and mm-hmm. we won the game easily 2-0 after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we were going well. That's a lucky one, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lucky one, but then you don't get lucky 10 times in a season like that.
No,
you know?
No,
so then you realize that he was seeing things that we couldn't even see as players and understand.
Yeah,
and you know, and that's just how extensive his knowledge of the game really was.
Mm-hmm. No, speaking of extensive, you had the dreadlocks in the '90s. And mm-hmm. I know that was probably big among the ladies. Why the dreadlocks though? Why that particular hairstyle? Just because of the ladies or another reason?
No, nothing to do with them.
Okay.
So my first professional team was actually in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm, yes. Uh-huh.
My first professional team was Portmorent United in St. Thomas in Jamaica.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Jamaica as a 16-year-old, coming out of a difficult place like Lavendale. So I identified with a lot of things that was happening at the time. And obviously, is dropping right into Jamaica as a 16-year-old, then it was easy for me to kind of go that way,
right?
But I believe and it wasn't just dreads, eh?
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, I am Rasta as well. I cut my dreads, but I'm still Rasta. You know, there's a lot of things about the Rastafarianism culture that I identify with.
Mm-hmm. Me too. So we can have a future conversation about that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would love to be at one of the stadiums where, you know, the real stars are playing, Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, Neymar, these boys. I would love to be at those stadiums. I would also love to meet these guys one-on-one, up close and personal. And this is not because you're on the podcast now, but you, Mr. Latipi, are the most famous footballer I have ever met in my life. I don't know if that is a sad comment or if that is a happy comment, but I know.
I'll take it as a compliment.
Yeah, of course. Yes, that was his intention. So you should take it as a compliment. So, you know, people always want to meet famous footballers and famous football personalities, but I've spoken about this on the podcast as well before. Pitch invaders. I am not a fan of pitch invaders, even though we look at these people. Oh, this person loves Ronaldo so much, loves Messi so much. This person got a jersey at the end of it all, but Ronaldo, I am not a fan of pitch invaders. And I think that security at a lot of these big stadiums, whether it be FIFA World Cup qualifying, UEFA Champions League, the big European leagues, I think the players on the pitch need way more protection. Nothing has happened so far. Nobody's been hurt or anything by a fan coming on. But players need more protection. And Mr. Latipi, as a player who played in Scotland, where it can get very volatile, Portugal, where it can get very volatile, you want to be protected. You want to know that the security has your best interests at heart and they are protecting you essentially while you are at work. Now, what do you think about these pitch invaders, and should it be harsher discipline for them and not just a slap on the wrist?
Yeah, I think, you know, like most things, there's two sides to that, right? Mm. I think that I totally agree that the players need to be comfortable and they need to feel safe. I think it's a disaster waiting to happen at some point. You know, it's happened in some other sporting disciplines as we know before.
Right.
I would like if they can come up with a solution to resolve this. But if I look at some of these pitch invaders, you know, then I can sympathize or empathize, whichever one, with some of them, you know. And I can say to you from my personal experience, I was walking through town one day, and this guy saw me. And he came up to me and he wouldn't stop talking to me. He wouldn't stop chatting, you know?
Yeah.
And I kind of say to him, well, okay, I give you a little bit of time, but I need to go about my business now. And this guy said something to me. He said, listen, boss, I only see you on TV, you know? So you see, when I get my little 15 minutes, let me talk my talk. So it kind of gives my different little perspective and thing. And we know that some of these players and what they mean to some of these fans and the effect that they have. And some of these lives. I've played for clubs that these fans, they live for the club. Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand that this is a situation. And I pray that it would continue to be a situation that is only fans really who idolize some right. of these players are running onto the field. Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't hurt them.
Somebody who wants to do them harm.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting perspective, and that's why you asked as well, because I knew you would have been at the height of your stardom in some big football countries, and I'm sure maybe not then they would have pitch invaders, but as you said, that story with that gentleman, these people really revere the footballers, and when they happen to see you in public, they know, oh shoot, this is my one opportunity to tell Russell Latapy or to tell this person what I think about them and whatever. So they said, listen, man, we can talk now, Russell, because you ain't going, wherever you're going, you have 10 minutes that you can spare for me, because I spare my whole lunchtime on Saturday, wherever, for you. So,
exactly.
So I have
but
some
then,
time.
But then there's another aspect of it as well that, I mean, I've played in some Central American countries as well before, and on these pitches, you have this big wire fence between you and the fans, and and I could understand it if it's volatile and a lot's happening, but it is not a fun atmosphere for the players as well. Mm-hmm. When you're playing and you feel like you're playing in a cage.
Yeah, it feels impersonal.
You're there to entertain and win football games and enjoy. And I think football, international games, high level, club games, it's entertainment. Mm-hmm. It's an event. It's not only sport. It's an event, So I think you want to have nice events and you want to have classy events. And I think just having a whole wire around it kind of thing just spoils it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope that they find a good balance that resolves the problem and keeps the players safe.
UEFA, from this season, as we mentioned earlier, you were the first Trinidad and Tobago player to play in the UEFA Champions League. One thing that the Champions League is known for, has been made famous for, is the away goals rule, which has broken a few hearts along the way and obviously provided a lot of joy as well. From this season, UEFA is scrapping the away goals rule, which means that, remember, there was a certain tactical philosophy that you would employ to get to make sure that you got the away goal or you didn't concede away goals. So now that whole tactical setup is thrown out the window, and it is just a straight fight of who can score more goals over the two legs, whether home or away. So if you win 1-0 at home, you still have to make sure you do the job on the road. Or if you do the job on the road, you still have to make sure you do the job at home, because there's no away goals to save you. So what do you think about that rule from UEFA? And is it a good one? Is it a bad one?
I like it. I think it's great for the fans. I think it's going to make football more exciting, teams are going to have to go for it. And as a coach, I can tell you that, that in important games, if you get your nose in front and there's 15 minutes to go or whatever, you're trying to, close up the back door, and it makes it for a really boring game. It's one team defending, one team winning. I think with this new rule, it's going to change a little bit how the last 15, 20 minutes of games normally is right now. I think teams, no matter what happens, know that they have to go out and win, and they're going to go out and score goals. And I suppose now the teams with technical players, if they up, they're going to try to keep the football.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a better option and a more entertaining option than parking the bus, as they say.
Well, interesting perspective. And I thought of that, But I didn't think of it fully, but I think, yes, both teams have to go for it, you know, whether home or away, and that will make for better football and probably higher scoring ties. And as you said, football is more than just a sport, is entertainment. And that's how UEFA makes the money. That's how FIFA makes the money, because of the entertainment value. Yes, football has its cultural value, sometimes maybe political value, but football has great entertainment value, and that we always have to put the entertainment above all else, because we want fans to enjoy the football. Over the last 2 years, we've really enjoyed the football. We've enjoyed performances from Robert Lewandowski at Bayern Munich and for Poland. We've obviously enjoyed the performances of Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi recently was awarded the Ballon d'Or, and some people agreed, some people disagreed. Some people think Lewandowski should have gotten the award because of his performances in 2020, but obviously there was no Ballon d'Or last year. So Ballon d'Or, Coach Latapy, what do you thought about the result, the final result?
Listen, we're talking about arguably the greatest player that ever played the game in Lionel Messi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most technical player, most magical player. So there was an understanding that, he can get it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
My personal view is that as you get a little older, you stop having, the type of influence and consistency, that you have in your prime. And we can see, in my mind, that is happening with Messi at presently.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is another factor as well, you know, that he grew up playing in Barcelona, and he knew when they played for him and so forth, and then move into PSG. Now, it also takes a little bit of time for arguably the greatest player in the world to adapt.
Yes.
To a different league and different players and so forth, right? But I'm a big fan, of Lewandowski.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's, In my career, I've had the opportunity to play with very few natural finishers like Lewandowski.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you play with players like that, it doesn't matter what happened. You just think that he can win all the time.
Yep, yep.
You know? So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of his. And, you know, it's tough that nobody didn't really break up that little Ballon d'Or situation with Messi and Ronaldo.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, keeping it, but I think that we have so many amazing players in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think with some of the rule changes in football, I think players are more protected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of tackling and that sort of stuff, and the game has become more entertaining. You know, and it's lovely to play football now. And a tackle from the back, like 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You're playing on better football pitches. You're playing in nicer stadiums, you know, on the soil heating and all this. So it is a wonderful spectacle. And there is really so many good players, you know. I like the boy Haaland. I mean, there's a list. Neymar,
yeah.
Mbappe.
Yeah.
I mean, who could forget the great Cristiano Ronaldo?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So many players, right? At the top of their game in world football, you know, and it has you glued to your phone or TV or whatever every weekend. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Every league in Europe, you know, you have top players and top football and top teams.
Very much so. And speaking of top players, top footballers, nobody is as top as Coach Russell Little Magician Latapy, or should I say Coach Russell Nigel Latapy. Top man, Coach, thanks for being on the podcast today. You could be doing anything else in beautiful Barbados, but you chose to speak with us here at Off the Post, the World Class Football Podcast. So we are very, very appreciative of you, Coach. It's always been respect between us from day one. And I pray that will continue as well.
Absolutely.
as we continue to support each other, support the national team, and support football in Barbados. I have one last question for you. I read somewhere that you speak Portuguese. Do you still speak Portuguese?
Yeah.
You still fluent? You still fluent? Or
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I spent a lot of years in Portugal, and my two kids, they live in Portugal, mm-hmm. so I speak to them in Portuguese. So yeah, I'm fluent in Portuguese. What I want to say as well, Nick, is that it's always a pleasure speaking with you. You know, mm-hmm. like you said, we are there's a lot of things that we see similarly, and what I'm very appreciative of you is that I know that your interest is the upliftment of mm-hmm. not only football but sports in general.
Definitely.
In Barbados, and mm-hmm. and for me as a coach, it is always encouraging to work with people who have the same goals.
Indeed.
So listen, anytime you want to talk to me, my brother, I'm always ready and willing.
Indeed. Thanks for that invitation, and thanks for the invitation to come and knock some balls with you as well, on the green.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll take the advice you gave me earlier. So when I give you a shout and say, yes, coach, I'm ready, you will know that I have all the ingredients for our battle.
Listen, I can give you a few tips if you want as well. So you come up one day and I can give you a few tips, but just make sure you go and you get a teacher to get you the right principles and fundamentals.
Yes, of course. I will do that.
Okay, cool. Tough man.
Yeah, man. All right, coach. We can link up very, very soon.
Later, buddy. Yes.
All right, man. Take care.
Yes.
All right, coach.